You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. U.S. lawmakers are upset about possible Syrian backing for holdout supporters of Saddam Hussein, and some want the administration to make their concerns clear to Damascus. Secretary of War Donald Rumsfeld has said there are indications top Iraqi Ba'ath Party officials have fled to Syria and has also accused Syria of shipping military equipment to Iraq. A Democratic lawmaker in the House of Representatives, Elliot Engel, is reintroducing legislation called the Syrian Accountability Act. The bill would allow President Bush to impose sanctions on Syria if it does not end support for terrorist organizations. The legislation was introduced last year, but despite bipartisan support, failed to come to a vote in the House. At the same time, the U.S. invasion of Iraq has led to widespread looting and a general state of chaos with no end in sight. Robert Collier is in Baghdad reporting for the San Francisco Chronicle. He joins us now by phone.
Well, part of the news is that there is still scattered skirmishing in the northern part of Baghdad. The city is not completely taken by the U.S. military. But the real story is the increasing anarchy that has produced a real orgy of looting throughout the city. Almost all major government installations have been looted, stripped down to even bathroom fixtures. Most major ministries, the Ministry of Education, higher education, industry, agriculture, irrigation, most hospitals, some major hotels, the Iraqi Museum, the Iraqi Arts Center, state-owned supermarkets, the Baghdad University, the several major embassies, the police headquarters, the traffic police headquarters, scientific institutes have been stripped bare. A vast amount of material has been taken out, and the U.S. military says that they're strapped for manpower, and it's essentially not currently their brief to stop looting unless there's sort of loss of life happening.
Robert, what kind of items are being looted, and what is the idea behind the looting, that these materials are later going to be sold? We understand that there is no business as usual taking place, in as much as there's no water, there's no food, people can't go to work, etc.
In a week, you'll be able to get the world's greatest bargains on used furniture, used bathroom fixtures, used lamps, used power generators, used air conditioners, used paintings, laboratory equipment, some computers, printers, copiers, everything down to, they strip the banisters on the railings on stairways. Everything that can literally be stripped out of these buildings is being stripped by mobs that just swarm in. In a very sort of atavistic way and just reduce things to nothing. Mm-hmm. In many cases, such as I indicated, scientific institutes, which in Iraq is fairly serious because Iraq is not, it's not a banana republic. It has a real scientific level. So there's a heck of a lot of scientific gear being first of all, just smashed. There's a lot of vandalism going on.
What role are the U.S. troops?
They're watching.
They're watching.
Right, and this is causing quite a bit of dissatisfaction among Baghdad residents, who say that they're very grateful, on the one hand, to the U.S. troops for having booted out an oppressive dictator and his oppressive regime, but on the other hand, this anarchy business that, first of all, is making life on their streets incredibly dangerous, and second of all, is simply destroying much of the basic infrastructure or developed infrastructure of the country, they feel very bitter about.
So there's no...
A number of people have said, we are not Burundi, we are not Rwanda, we are Iraq, we are a developed country. And this is what we've been reduced to these mobs of looters who are just ripping everything that could possibly be ripped out of for no reason whatsoever.
And we know that go right ahead.
And I'm sorry, and many and people say, well, you know, we thought we were being liberated and not to be reduced to anarchy. And so there's really a serious PR problem in the making. That from the U.S. troops' perspective, I mean, they still have to look at after the Iraqi, the remnants of the Iraqi military resistance, and are really focusing on that. And they don't have the manpower really to become a police force. Of course, there is no police force now because it made itself scarce. It disappeared. Not just the regular police force, but the secret police force and everything else that really kept order in the Iraqi society. And now, of course, there is none of that, and there's just a relatively small number of American troops who say, well, it's not our business to stop most looting. And so there's a lot of pent up frustrations because of the dictatorship. People are frustrated, especially poor people. And there's this very complex sort of psychological dynamic of the street that it's hard to understand from the outside, and even from the inside. Many Baghdad residents say that they just don't understand it, that this is an aspect of their culture and their society that they had just never imagined existed.
Robert Collier reporting to us live from Baghdad. Robert, thank you very much for your time and your participation, and you be safe there. Robert Collier in Baghdad, reporting for the San Francisco Chronicle. Meet Jenny Klotz and Michael Simon, who live in the rural community of Mondovi, Wisconsin, population 2,500, where the busiest intersection is controlled by a four-way stop sign. Jenny recently found out how hard it can be to voice an opinion in a small town. She was hushed by local residents after trying to hang a protest sign outside her apartment window. Jenny asked her friend Michael for support, and together they found a way to make themselves heard. Peace Watch correspondent Dan Drum recently spoke with the two young women about their experience.
I live above the store that I work at. The night that, President Bush said we were going to start attacking Iraq, I sat down and I made my banner, which said, "No blood for oil," and I hung it up outside of my living room windows. And I live in an apartment above a business on the busiest street in my small town. So, I thought it's a good idea, everybody would see it. In my experience, seeing other people's signs and talking to other people, my viewpoint was molded. And I thought, that it was important to get as many viewpoints out there as possible.
She had made the sign, "No blood for oil," and she put it outside of her apartment, which is above Malum's Pharmacy. And her employer, he said, she called him and said, "Is this okay?" And he's like, "As long as you make sure that nobody thinks it's associated with Malum's, it's fine." But then as the day went on, there was so much harassment, people coming into her place of work and yelling at her, one guy in particular, a veteran. People were calling, just raising such a stink about this, that it got to the point where her employer told her to put it out back.
The first man who came in to complain showed up in, his VFW coat and his hat and things, and he brought in this piece of paper, and he just said, "I printed this off. I want you to know we buried a veteran today, and I want you to read this." And it was all, run off on American flag paper. And I said to him, "My home address is blah, 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 blah. My phone number is blah, 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 blah. If you want to mail it to me, you can, and I will read it. Or if you want to call me up and read it to me over the phone, you can. But you cannot come to my place of work and harass me." And people are calling, asking to talk to the pharmacist, and it's not his job to, field questions about this. So I told him, I said, "If anyone else calls about it, give them my home phone number. Tell them to call me. It's not your responsibility to answer their questions. It's nothing you did. It's my responsibility. Don't talk to anyone about it." He basically said that if I refused to take it down, that he would kick me out of the apartment, that I wouldn't leave him any other choice. And he also, you know, kind of veiled, in a veiled manner, said that I could lose my job because, you know, I was offending customers.
So then she put it out back. The harassment still continued. So they said, just take it down or you're going to be fired and you're going to be kicked out of your apartment. So she had to do it because she doesn't really have anywhere else to go and, you know, you need a job.
The hardest thing to do in a small town is to have an opinion, unless it's, you know, the one given opinion of the people. Actually, I feel more than just a little bad about, you know, buckling under and taking it down because, you know, I've never really been afraid to say what I want to say. Like, I crumbled under pressure. I'm not, you know, pretending I didn't, but at this point, I don't have anywhere to go.
Then she finished the day at work, and then when she got home, she called me, and she's like, should I do something about this? Should we... Is there anything?
I called up a friend of mine, Michael Simon, because we had both gone to the rally in Madison, and I knew that she, you know, since she's a university student, she would have connections with groups up there.
I think I sent out a total of 3 emails to everybody, and then there were just a few, you know, not just a few, there were actually quite a few people who wrote back.
It went into play that we were going to have, you know, an anti-war demonstration.
I've never organized a demonstration or anything. I didn't even know what I was doing the whole time. The first people to appear were some of the women in black, and, you know, they set up in their corner, and we kind of decided that we were going to just take over the 4 corners of downtown. And as I stood there, more people started coming up, and we passed out extra signs to people who didn't have signs. It was all pretty peaceful. We weren't really chanting or yelling. We were just holding our signs. The people driving by, some people were honking, some people were yelling, starting to yell. Then these 2 guys came out of the bar. One had a cowboy hat on and a Garth Brooks style shirt, and the other one had a Budweiser racing jacket.
So what's your wonderful sign say? Oh, isn't that fantastic?
What's your sign say? Oh.
Budweiser.
Budweiser.
You goddamn right.
And they just started shouting at us about everything we own comes from Iraq, and they were soon joined by veterans holding American flags and yelling at us that, you know, we're protesting against, you know, the American flag, which we were really supporting.
There are so many good, you know, intelligent, factual arguments against this war. And the only opposition we were getting was just unintelligent shouting.
You're getting nothing. You're doing nothing. You're a fucking idiot!
People in that town, it's like as soon as you say anything against the war, you're against the troops, you're against the government, you're against the president, you're against God.
Let's just all go home. At least and pray. You'd do more good by praying.
Stand someplace. Stand in front of that car.
We'll wait till
a big old rig comes rolling through 18-wheelers. Stand on front of that. See what they say about your big old protest.
It just really made me mad. Like, that's, I kind of started yelling back a little bit, and, you know, it was hard not to. That's just, I mean, I shut up after a minute because, like, you realize that there's really no point in, like, trying to talk to these people because they're not trying to talk. They're just trying to, they're not going to listen to what you have to say. And
100% right or wrong, stand behind them. Right or wrong. We stand behind our president because he's our president. He's our king. We bow to our king.
It would have been more difficult if they were making intelligent argument or if I could see a point to what they were saying, or if I could see that they knew what they were saying.
You don't think we're bombing cities?
Accidentally, you know, missiles do accidentally miss range and go different places. Well, that's what war is about. You know, accidents do happen. We're trying to blow up their shit so they don't attack us, kill you, and blow up this whole town with a 747 airplane.
You know, I just...
Because they're cycle fuckers.
The hardest part for me about, you know, the whole demonstration was I knew when provoked, it's very hard. It's very hard. for me to keep my mouth shut. And when those guys just came stumbling out of the bar, you know, with beers in their hands.
What about the other countries that want to control the oil? What's up, bro? What about them? What about Russia? What about Germany? What about all those countries that want to control the oil? They're over there backing us up because we want to free their country from that dumbass that's putting their civilians behind them. Putting bags over our head and shooting us.
You don't know enough about the
because our mechanics are over there fixing stuff that's breaking down. And they're shooting us, putting bags over our head and shooting us. And our guys don't even have no guns.
You're just supporting a Hitler. That's what you're supporting. A Hitler.
Shouting about how we were supporting a Hitler. But then alternately he would shout something about kill all the Iraqis or we should blow them all up. It's like, so what was so wrong with Hitler if you agree with mass murder based on ethnicity or, you know?
And we're giving them food. Dumbass United States country. I wouldn't give no country food that we're fighting with. I would let them fuckers starve. You know, women that are all covered up in stuff over their face. They can't show their face because that's their stuff that they can't do.
If someone can sit down with me and talk to me intelligently about why we need this war, I'm more than willing to talk. But these people, their argument was built on a lot of just insulting one-liners.
They threatened us with nuclear warheads that they found over there that could kill us all within 2 weeks.
And they could drop it on us, but we're trying to take it away.
Yes.
And I guess that is kind of difficult, that it was all just coming out of sheer ignorance, and then you think about the masses of people who are under the same impressions.
We support our troops just as much as anyone else.
My ass you do. What the hell are you doing standing here then?
Supporting the troops. We'll support
them. No, you are not supporting the troops.
We want them here safe.
Well, yeah, everybody wants them here safe.
So what's the problem?
You gotta take his ass out.
No, it wasn't difficult. It was just I was a little worried about, you know, an outbreak of violence against anybody. And actually, a woman did come up and grab the girl standing next to me, and like I had grabbed her hand. I had to like pry her hand off the girl and be like, hands off.
Yeah, but see, you're sort of right. You said you figured that if you would protest this war, you think that you would stop it. But see, I'm a Vietnam veteran like some of these other guys are, and we've seen what the protesters did. They, you know, we were trying to fight for democracy and kick out the communists, you know, and it was sort of a long, complicated issue. But this here, it's a simple issue of he dishonored the UN resolution and didn't obey it. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, he killed hundreds of thousands of his people, just like Hitler did. So this is a completely different situation. And what you're doing in this situation, you're trying to use that kind of concept to stop the war. But actually, what you're doing, the reality is you're supporting Hussein's regime and prolonging it every day that you're protesting.
We had, I'd say, at least 4 local police cars from Mondovi. We had the sheriff himself driving around. We had, like, a sheriff's deputy. We had state patrol. We had police from Durand. We had police from Pepin County.
What are you coming down and trying to stir up a hornet's nest in a little town like Mondovi?
Soon, more citizens from Mondovi in support of these people showed up. But I have to say that their numbers did not match ours. Maybe half, but I don't even think they had half the people we had out there.
Just today, I went to the bank, and there was a girl who was a couple years younger than me. And, you know, she said, I saw you guys out there on Sunday, you know, and had I, you know, not been with my parents, I think I might have actually come and stood with you for a while, at least talk to you guys. I've overheard, you know, negative comments, too, about, you know, did you see the protesters on Sunday? You know, they think they're something special, you know, and everything. It's been mixed. It's been mixed.
I don't know. In the end, I feel that Jenny and I both felt that it was a success just because, you know, there was such a reaction. People did see. I mean, that's what the whole point was to be seen and let them know that we're supported, and they definitely know that now.
My personal goal was just to spark conversation within the community, because, you know, if people talk about what happened, that's enough. I just wanted people to realize that there was opposition out there, that there was another way of thinking.
You cannot control. You 20 people cannot control what is going on in Afghanistan, what is going on in Iraq. So what's the point? You're wasting your time.
It is so hard. It is so hard to convince people to speak out against something in a small town. It really is, even if they believe it.
We both were realizing that we're in a small rural area, and we weren't the only two. I mean, there's teachers in the school, there's students in the school there, and certain, you know, other citizens of Mandovi had come up to her and, you know, kind of quietly, oh, yeah, I believe that. But everyone was just so worried about the backlash. I mean, just seeing the harassment that she experienced or hearing about it, you hear about these things really fast in a small town. So we just wanted to, for the people who are too nervous to speak about it on their own, we just wanted to show that there are places or there are other people, not just maybe in Mandovi, but near enough for to feel that you're supported with these views. And then also for the people in Mandovi who are trying so hard to just like suppress Jenny's ideas and feelings, that, you know, she's not alone, and you can't just quiet that. You know, there's other people, and you can't, maybe you can stop one voice for a day, but we'll be here and we'll stand behind each other, you know, very strongly. So
I love the United States. It's just right now she's kind of troubled. You know, it's like a friend that's really messed up. You don't just, you know, give her one or two chances and then walk out on her when she's falling apart. You have to stay there. You have to love it and see her through things. And that's what I'm doing, you know?
Jenny and I, like, afterwards we went up to her apartment. And I wasn't quite sure, like, I felt myself that it was pretty good. I felt good afterwards. And I asked Jenny in her apartment, I said, is that what you wanted? I mean, is that what you were looking for? And she said, yeah, that's exactly what I had in mind. That makes me feel a lot better. I told her she should put her sign back out.
Mandovi, Wisconsin residents Michael Simon and Jenny Klotz speaking with Peace Watch correspondent Dan Drum. Since the protest, Jenny has been invited to appear on TV and radio shows in neighboring cities and continues to receive postcards supporting her efforts. Her landlord has recently issued her an eviction notice, which she intends to fight. Despite having to face consequences like Jenny Klotz, people opposed to the war continue to speak out at every chance they get. Among the outspoken critics of the war is historian Howard Zinn, who asserts that we the people have a responsibility to hold elected officials to the principles they have sworn to uphold.
There's a basic weakness in governance. However massive their armies, however wealthy their treasuries, however they control the information given to the public, because their power depends on the obedience of citizens, of soldiers, of civil servants, of journalists and writers and teachers and artists. When these people begin to suspect they have been deceived, and when they withdraw their support, the government loses its legitimacy and its power. The process of undermining the legitimacy of our own government has begun. There has been a worm eating at the innards of its complacency all along. The knowledge of the American public, buried but in a very shallow grave, easy to disinter, that this government came to power by a political coup, not by popular will. The movement should not let this be forgotten. The first steps to delegitimize this government are being taken in small but significant ways. The generals who led the Gulf War of 1991 speak out against this war as foolish, unnecessary, dangerous. The CIA contradicts the president by saying Saddam Hussein is not likely to use his weapons unless he is attacked. All across the country, 57 cities and counties have passed resolutions against the war, responding to their citizens. The actions will multiply, the stakes will be higher. The responsibility of the peace movement will be huge, to speak to what people may feel, but are hesitant to say that this is a war for oil, for business. Bring back the Vietnam-era poster, "War is good for business. Invest your son." No action should be seen as too small. No nonviolent action should be seen as too large. The calls now for the impeachment of George Bush should multiply. The constitutional requirement, high crimes and misdemeanors, certainly applies to our sending our young halfway around the world to kill and be killed in a war of aggression against the people who have not attacked us. The absurdity of this war is so starkly clear that people who have never been involved in an anti-war demonstration have been showing up in huge numbers at recent rallies. If you've been to one of them, you can testify to the numbers of young people and older people doing this for the first time. Arguments for the war are paper thin and fall apart at first touch. Weapons of mass destruction? Iraq may develop one nuclear bomb, though the UN inspectors find no sign of development. But Israel has 200 nuclear weapons, and the United States has 10,000, and six other countries have undisclosed numbers. Saddam Hussein a tyrant? Undoubtedly, like many others in the world. A threat to the world? Then how come the rest of the world, much closer to Iraq, does not want war? Defending ourselves? The most incredible statement of all. Fighting terrorism? No connection found between September 11th and Iraq. I believe it is the obvious emptiness of the administration position that is responsible for the swift growth of the anti-war movement. Bush will be responsible for the lives lost, the children crippled, the terrorizing of millions of ordinary people, the American GIs not returning to their families. And all of us will be responsible for bringing that to a halt. Men who have no respect for human life or for freedom or justice have taken over this beautiful country of ours. It will be up to the American people to take it back.
Howard Zinn, history professor emeritus at Boston University and author of The People's History of the United States. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. Our associate producer is Angelique Shofar. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett and Adel Hamid of KPFA, Mike Aloney and Keith Shaljian. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks also to our consulting producer, Sam Husseini. Without your financial support, Peace Watch will cease to exist as of May 1st. It's your financial support that makes this program possible. So please pledge your support through our secure online website at pacifica.org. Or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. That's Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. Send us your feedback at peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.